Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Wednesday, and yes, I'm sure I will call it the Monday Drive at some point. No, as long as Jason's here, I know it'll be Wednesday. It is the Wednesday Drive. Hope everybody had a great 4th of July. It was a hot, then wet, then steamy, but nice 4th of July.
Really, it was spring the last time you were on the show.
No, it was pretty hot.
Yeah, that's true.
It was pretty hot. I was on last Monday, remember? It was
that's
pretty
right.
Hot.
Yeah, you were, yeah.
It was pretty darn hot. It was really hot at the beach, too,
Bill, it was great. It hasn't cooled down substantially.
No, it hasn't. As a matter of fact, they were saying the real heat was going to be arriving at the beach this week. Yeah, no. But no, we had a great time, enjoyed the days off. I was telling Drew, I didn't get as up close and personal as a lot of the folks there at the beach wanted to with the little shark that was swimming along. We had about a 3 to 4 foot shark, just sort of a baby shark, it was just right there from the pier at Pensacola Beach. And let me tell you, the water was beautiful, clear, not a bit of seaweed. Only saw a couple of jellyfish, and that was down toward Fort Pickens.
You were saying green flags.
Green flags.
A little bit
surprising. No riptide at all. I mean, it was amazing there at Pensacola. But it made it very easy to see the little shark that was there on Wednesday. Went out Wednesday morning, and it's like, oh, there's a fin. And there were folks out there, and it swam right in between them along a little sandbar. It swam about 50 yards down or I guess east, and then would turn around and swim back, and did that just sort of doing laps. And some folks did realize that, oh, that's a shark. And there were a lot of pictures and videos being taken. But then some of the, and I don't know these folks personally, but they don't have a lot of sense, were out there just like seeing how close they could get to the shark. And I'm going, here are some of the reasons that you hear about some shark attacks, because some people just don't have any sense. Although the shark didn't seem inclined at all, it must have found plenty of snacks there in the chum and stuff that people were, you know, fishing with off the pier.
I mean, if a shark wants to find out how close he can get to you.
Yeah. I mean, there was one.
Then you got a problem on your hands.
There was one, and the guy was a complete idiot. Guy said, I'm going to pet it. And it's like, no, you're not. It's going to take your hand if you try to do that. Yeah. But I mean, the thing is, it got to just sort of be ho-hum. Here it came, and there it went. And when it came, if I was out in the water, I'd be behind a large group of people. I'd find a large group of people, I'd get behind it. I took that same philosophy of, you know, if you and a buddy are being chased by a bear, how fast do you have to be?
Faster
than your buddy.
Faster than
your
buddy.
That's it. I felt like I could swim, and I was going to be behind some other people. But if I saw it, I would get out.
Jason Caldwell and I might have similar stories about seeing people, because we both lived in the Tampa-St. Pete area for a little while, and the parks, the state parks and the city parks, some of them have swamps and wildlife, and you get the occasional alligator.
Golf courses
See, that's too.
That's where mine is.
Sure, and I think in you can tell the locals from the tourists as far as who decides it's a great idea to get real close.
A photo op. Yeah, I need to go take a picture.
Yeah,
I've got the
gators.
My best story is being in the Pigeon Forge Gatlinburg area and on top of the mountain. There's a place where you can ride, and it's a big circle, probably 10 miles long. And you might see wildlife. You might see bears. You'll see deer. You see all kind of different things. Well, a few years back, we were on that, and people will stop and take pictures, you know. So it takes a while to get around this thing because you're going slow. A few years back, stop, and we're like, oh, why is there traffic stopped? And we get up, and when we get there, there's a bear digging in a stump right off the side of the road.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people 15 feet away with phones. And I'm like, first of all, this is not a zoo. That's not somebody's pet. Like, this is still out in the wild. They just happen to feed them and they bring them here. Yes. I mean, 15 feet away from a bear digging in a stump. I'm like, you know what he's doing? He's digging for food.
Right.
Yeah. You might be next.
I've never seen.
You're easier than digging in the stump.
I have not seen an Alabama bear in my time in living in the state and different parts of the area.
I can't say that I have, and I've lived here a lot longer than you have.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen it. But now I've seen. I think Northwest Florida, outside of when you get into, I mean, we saw that one swimming on the clip that went viral. Yeah, I mean,
they're at the beach now.
Yeah, the area between when you get into outside of Niceville towards Freeport, towards closer to I-10. Yeah, yeah, I mean the wooded areas out there. I think it's more plausible that you could get a bear, a family of bears. I even think there's like sort of wildlife refuge areas that back up to the water, which was sort of the theory of where that bear came from, but I haven't seen him. I'm told Alabama has you know, I'm not desperate to see one up close or anything like that, but that's another predator you got to watch out for.
Anyway, other than that, everything was great. I mean, there was a nice breeze. It was hot. We didn't get any rain.
Did you get some seafood?
Oh yeah, did I get some seafood? Yeah.
I asked Bill, Jason. You know, what's a trip to. Like, what do you feel like you got to do before you leave Pensacola on one of these trips? And it was, you know, seafood was on the list.
Oh, yes. I mean, yeah, it was the fish house, I believe, first night.
So. All right.
Yeah. Really had a great time. So good to be back, though. Yeah, it does feel like Monday since yesterday was the 4th. Hope everybody had a good good day off if you got the opportunity yesterday. Of course, we have been... haven't had a show since Friday, so we're here, and you heard Jason Caldwell from the 24/7 Network. Is it all just going to Auburn Undercover?
It is, yes, yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, Mark has you know, semi-retired.
He was out at Floyd and Teresa's yesterday. Yes. He looks great.
It's doing him well. He's
tan, playing tennis and drop some weight.
Yeah, he's been playing tennis, doing, you know, some traveling, doing those things, and so he may still be back with us a little bit in the fall. It's up to him, whatever he wants to do. But yeah, we're, you know, I'm officially a CBS/Paramount employee as part of mine now, so I'm on that side. But yeah, and it's the 15th anniversary of Auburn Undercover right now this week.
Oh, okay.
So it's the 15th anniversary in this month. So until the 15th, if you haven't been a subscriber before, you can subscribe and get 75% off your first year subscription.
That's a serious deal.
Yeah, so yeah, all that right there. So yeah, tons of stuff going on as get to this time. And as we've seen, the month of July is a busy time for different reasons. Mm-hmm. It's not visit times, but
no,
there's
a lot of the time and a couple of decisions here over the holidays.
Yeah, absolutely. A couple yesterday, one expected, one very much unexpected.
Right.
Yesterday, DJ Barber was expected, linebacker from Clay Chalkville. That's one that was expected. And a guy that I made a comparison to KJ Britt. I think he's that kind of player, you know, not a 6'4 linebacker, but a guy that's physical, can run, play inside, kind of a true middle linebacker. So I think a good pickup there for Auburn. And then on the flip side, Cam Coleman to Texas A&M. If you would have asked me where they fit in the pecking order, I would have said at best third.
I don't know that there were a lot of A&M folks expecting that one.
No. Yeah, people weren't sure they were going to medal, let alone actually finish first.
I would have guessed, I thought it was Auburn, Florida State was the biggest contention there. And I think Auburn was in the mix. I think Auburn will remain in the mix for Cam Coleman. I think this one's a long way till December, to be quite honest. This season could have a lot to do with Cam Coleman and many other guys. If Auburn comes out and is throwing the ball, doing those things.
What's the sales pitch from A&M to a Cam Coleman in your mind?
Good question. I'm not really sure. Hey, we're going to be different than we've been the entire time that our coach is there. Bobby Petrino going to make that much difference. Mm-hmm. Finally got a quarterback. I'm guessing that's it. You know, but that's, you know, the thing. Hey, we were, you know, and I saw a quote where he said they were young last year. They're going to be better this year. You know, I think that's the pitch right now.
A lot of people jump to the NIL conclusion when A&M.
Hard not to, right, though, when A&M's involved.
They've been so involved. That's the thing, is that it opens the door for that. I'm sure, you know, it's a factor for lots of guys right now. You know, Damian Craig's a factor in this one. You know, a guy that's coaching that position at Texas A&M. I think they're selling them on, hey, look at what Bobby Petrino's done in his past. We're going to throw the football. Connor Wegman's going to be a guy that will be a two-year starter by the time you get here, that kind of thing. But on the flip side, I think Auburn can sell those same things this season if you show that on the field and can stay in this thing.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's not as though Auburn has a staff that doesn't have any track record of doing anything offensively. So you don't think that this is a done deal yet. I mean Auburn's not going, okay, that's fine, we'll just move on.
No, I mean they're still recruiting their guys, and Perry Thompson still, they want to get two big physical outside receivers. He's one of the guys they want. Perry Thompson's the other one. What it does is it opens the door for other guys, and he was one of the guys that was there. You still recruit him, but you gotta go and do some other things.
Sure.
Jimbo coached Patrick Nix when Patrick Nix was here, correct? He was the quarterback's coach for Nix's time at Auburn.
He was the offensive coordinator, yes.
Have they remained close? Do you know if there's? It's interesting that he said, you know, he's going to play for
– Yeah, but, you know, somebody else mentioned – they didn't really mention that, but I said, look, this not getting guys from Central Phoenix City started before
– Oh, it's Patrick been Nix going on for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. And I was going to ask you that. I mean, I've seen a lot of people saying, you know, well, we don't have a chance till Pat Nix is gone. And it's like, no, I don't think that's the case.
No, he's given Auburn a chance because this here's the thing about it. Cam Coleman's a guy that saw, and it's not this staff, but he saw the previous staff not recruit that school and not make them a priority. They came, Patrick Nix brought Central Phoenix City to a 7-on-7 this summer. That's the first time I can remember Central being here for a 7-on-7.
Well, and his son came to play at Auburn, which I feel like if there was an anti-Auburn agenda,
yeah, he would have just gone to Texas A&M to begin with. If it was all about Jimbo Fisher,
yeah, and maybe some people think that, I don't know if it's even believed that since Bo Nix left, Patrick Nix could hold some sort of. I think that's connecting dots where
correct that you don't stuff have isn't there yet. Correct. It's imaginary dots.
But the idea that Jimbo coached Patrick Nix is interesting.
Well, him and Damian were teammates.
Yeah, and Damian was a teammate.
There are connections to that staff. Bobby Petrino was a guy that was at Auburn, even though it wasn't during the same time. I mean, there are some connections there. So, it makes a little sense of that one, but I don't know. I think this one's more about a guy that, went to Texas A&M. It's really nice. Their facilities are really good, and, you know, okay, we're gonna do it big, and okay.
There are receivers they can point to with NFL that have had gotten to the NFL and played well. The Mike Evans, most notably, is a guy who didn't necessarily play for this group, but
and it's the same it's the same situation. You go, a group that's looking to, hey, you're the missing piece, to what we're doing, and Auburn's going, look, you're one of the missing pieces. Because it's not just one. Texas A&M, I'm sure they're selling them. I'm like, you're the guy that's going to push us over the top.
It is two different sales pitches, right? It's do you want to be next in a line of – well, I mean, because different schools are dealing with this. And Auburn's in one of these camps. It's like, do you want to be the next in a long line of successful receivers that have come through this program and gotten to the NFL? Or do you want to be the first one and make your mark that way? Because Auburn's, Darius Slayton gets on the field. But
true. Hugh Freeze has got a couple of guys he can point to and say, you could be the next one of mine.
Absolutely,
and it's the same, and that's the same sales pitch as A&M going. All
right.
Well,
because who are the great ones that A&M's had since Jimbo's been?
They haven't had one.
Yeah.
Jimbo Fisher arrived.
They've recruited a lot of really good ones.
They've
recruited some 4- and 5-star guys at wide receiver that have not done anything in that offense. So that's the thing. And so a lot of times it comes down to relationship. Yeah, and that's why it's opened the door for people to go, maybe it's a little something else. Could be. But I still think that Auburn's going to be involved in this one until December. This one's going to go down to the wire. And it's a lot closer to Auburn than it is to Texas A&M. We'll see if that has a factor.
A&M with probably 4 losable games in the first 6, too. As when we look ahead to the schedule,
it's a very interesting year for Texas A&M, especially with everything that's going on. All the things that you've done in terms of money, making this move to Bobby Petrino, is that going to work?
Off the top of my head, I believe it's Miami, Auburn.
I'm going there right
Miami,
now.
Auburn, Arkansas, and Alabama, I believe,
yeah,
are
so
four
you're
of
at,
their first
you're
six.
At Miami in week 2, Auburn in week 4 at home, at Arkansas, Alabama at Tennessee, South Carolina at Ole Miss, Mississippi State at LSU.
I forgot Tennessee was right after Alabama. So you're talking five of the first 7.
If you ask me right now, I say they're no better than 8-4.
What are they after?
8-4 might be pretty dang good.
I mean, no better than that.
What's their record when the Alabama game's over? If assuming they win those two out of conference games, you're talking about those first four, Miami.
That's 6 games in. I think best 4-2.
If they're not four and two,
they're in trouble. I mean, like, if they're not 4-2, it's over with, in my opinion.
If they're not 4-2, it could be Jimbo's last game.
Yes,
at A&M. Because if they're not 4-2, and that's a bad looking loss, it could be. That could be the night the plug gets pulled.
Yeah, because you're talking
about, what you're looking at.
You're talking about, you know, going to Tennessee, and then
maybe he gets another week.
Then an off week before South Carolina, and then at Ole Miss.
You want to go? You want to go to Knoxville and must win game right now? Like that's.
No, probably not.
No,
and that's the thing you're talking about. That's a challenging schedule.
It is
for a group that is going to have a lot of pressure on them to show that you're turning it over and ready to go.
Well, you've already got some of the pundits saying this is the year. I mean, they've been saying it for the last three. We'll see.
Well, the Auburn game is really interesting because depending on what happens in that Miami game, that could be a must-win game when Auburn goes to A&M in week four. That could be a game that has a huge – I mean, if they're 2-1, and I don't know enough about Miami. I know they bring back the quarterback they're excited about, and it's been a busy offseason, but I can't tell you all that much about them. But if A&M's 2-1 when Auburn comes to town, like that feels like a must-win game for Jimbo Fisher in week four with what's left on the schedule there. And, I mean, that makes – the thought of playing a road game that's a must-win game for the opponent is a little bit – you know, that I think that makes it one of the more challenging games on Auburn's schedule potentially.
Yeah, but on the flip side of that, to me, College Station is about the easiest place in this league to play other than Vandy. It's easier than Ole Miss. It's easier than Mississippi State. I don't care if there's 200,000 people there. It's not real loud. It's not crazy. They're very far removed from the stadium. Auburn has played pretty well there.
And A&M will feel that pressure too.
Yeah.
I mean, A&M will be feeling that pressure too.
Sure they will.
It won't just be a must-win game in the eyes of Auburn and the fans. Like those, they'll need to start quickly, or the fans will let them know how they feel about the current state of things.
Just underway. Love for you to join in here on the Wednesday Drive. A reminder, hour number one of the drive brought to you by the good folks at Kia of Auburn on South College and KiaofAuburn.com. Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one. And they're also the sponsor of our hotline. And you can join us by calling 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, which is available however you listen to podcasts. You can go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron. Rate, review, subscribe if you do it that way. You can also go to ESPNAU.com and use the podcast center. You can also listen to the show live at ESPNAU.com. Podcast The Drive presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
Need to get to our first break of the afternoon? Come on in and join us here on the Wednesday Drive.
Did you know that electrical fires cause over 50...
And Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Wednesday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell got Drew at the controls. And we'll get to the Kia of Auburn hotline. And Yellowhammer is up first. Hey, Yellowhammer.
Hey, afternoon. I wanted to talk about A&M. We have Jimbo Fisher having to hire Petrino, or he decided to hire Petrino. And second thing is it his idea that to keep the wolves at the door from biting him? He has to rely on offense to carry him. That's the way he can get to the kind of record that will calm everybody down. And does he have the personnel there to be that kind of an offense to carry a team?
Good questions, Yellowhammer. And to start with, yeah, I don't think that Bobby Petrino is somebody that Jimbo's been wanting to hire for a few years. Jimbo has always been a play caller. He's the offensive guy. He's been the play caller. The play calling, the offense has not been very productive for the last few years,
and
there's been more and more criticism.
And Hugh Freeze acknowledged it when he first got the job, too. And Jason, I'd love your thoughts here. It's harder than ever at a program that's trying to recruit at a national championship level. It's harder than ever to be a head coach that calls plays for the offense, right? Like to think about that responsibility, considering how A&M recruits and how they'd like to recruit, it's kind of crazy that they had a head coach who was calling the plays in this day and age, especially when the results weren't overwhelming. And there's maybe a question of whether the best thing for the offense is whether or not Jimbo Fisher calls the plays, right? Do you think we're going to see fewer and fewer head coaches who call plays at superpowers because of everything else the job entails?
Yeah, it's more difficult for sure. There's a lot more involved, and so it makes it harder. I think you're going to see more people do what Hugh Freeze has talked about doing, which is, hey, I'm red zone, those kind of things. That's going to be I'm going to specialize in those areas, do those kind of things, and take some of that off the plate of the other coordinator. But no, to answer the original question, I think Jimbo Fisher felt like if I don't do something, then this thing may not work at all. Period. You got to show somebody that you're willing to adapt.
The offense we saw at Jordan-Hare Stadium last year was not working at all.
No,
like the offense they brought to Jordan-Hare in that Auburn A&M game was remarkable. Granted, I know they were on. Was like quarterback three since the season started. You know, there were injuries in the quarterback room and there were other problems, but you know that was a team that, you know, was coming in having, you know, they thought they were starting to find something, and it was stunning how inept they and some of that goes to the Auburn defense, sure, but a lot of it was on A&M just not being able to generate anything when they had the football.
Yeah, no, and you know this. I'm looking through kind of their roster. It's a pretty loaded roster. Now
they have recruited. I mean, they've recruited very well over the last few years.
Their defensive line and defensive front.
They're deep,
and should be a strength for this team. And they've been pretty good defensively. But you know, nobody's talked about the loss of Mike Elko a couple of years ago. What he's done at Duke has been huge, because the defense, while they've had talented players, they haven't been as good as they were a couple of years ago. Mike Elko is a really good football coach, and he's shown that at Duke the last couple of years. Just having guys is the first step. And like we talk about all the time, having a bunch of 4- and 5-star guys doesn't guarantee success, but not having them guarantees that you're not going to have much success.
If Duke's good and A&M's not, is Elko a candidate? You think for
man,
that job?
You would think so. Yeah. Based on that history, he's going to be a candidate a lot of places. Mm-hmm. Based on what they've done, I mean, they're selling out football games. You know, obviously, a quarterback from this state.
Are they going to beat Clemson opening night?
If I had to pick right now, I think they've got a better quarterback.
Yeah.
Even though he's not as highly rated, he's a guy that has more experience. They've been successful. They've recruited pretty well at Duke.
Monday night Clemson Duke game is
I wouldn't want to play that team out of the gate with their returning guys. Duke's got a bunch of returning guys. They got a quarterback in game one that will be ready to go, and uncertainty on the other side. I mean, the last time we saw Clemson and their offense and their quarterback was not very good against Tennessee.
No.
That's a challenging one for, hey, let's go ahead and throw an ACC opener on the table and have Clemson play Duke right out of the gate.
Anything else, Yellowhammer?
Oh, well, just real quick, do you think their offense, A&M's offense, has the kind of personnel that can really be sort of remarkable?
It's hard to say.
Yeah, I think they have a chance. Now, they've got Anaya Smith coming back. Anaya Smith, who was probably their most explosive receiver mm-hmm. last year, got hurt. He's coming back now as a grad transfer. Evan Stewart, young guy that was fantastic last year as a freshman. You got Moose Muhammad, Asim Muhammad's son. I mean, they've got some wide receivers. Now, you lose a dynamic tailback, you know, the guy that was a big play threat, but they've recruited well. Reuben Owens.
Was there an incident with Moose Muhammad last year?
Yes.
Do I remember
something? The gloves or something like that. He got suspended.
Something happened last year. No, super talented receiver and, son of an NFL player. I mean, a lot of the guys at the skill positions for A&M were recruited, and their profile as recruits would tell you these are impact all-conference type guys. Maybe they haven't shown it yet thus far.
And that's why the pressure continues to build, correct, because the A&M fan base believes that too, and they're waiting.
They've gotten more out of the line of scrimmage recruits, you know, seemingly than
offensive line has been a strength, and they were young there last year. But you lose Devin Achane, 1,149 yards last year. But you look at the receiving. Evan Stewart's back, 53 catches, 649 yards, two touchdowns. Moose Muhammad, 38 catches, 610 yards and four touchdowns. Anai Smith, who was their top guy, only caught 15. You know, the question is, can Connor Wegman be the guy? 55%, 8 touchdowns, no interceptions. So pretty good from a young guy. Now it'll be kind of his job. Can he
super conservative like last year?
Correct.
Like that was part of the reason why he didn't throw any interceptions. It was very, very safe, exactly what I
talked about with some other folks recently. All right, think about where, you know, people's like, oh, the question surrounding Auburn because the transfers court. Okay, who in this league today do you know pretty much what you're going to get? I don't know what I'm getting at Alabama.
LA, Georgia is probably
even though the quarterback, we don't know.
Maybe LSU.
Am I missing this? Who's first team? I mean, we're going to media days in 2 weeks.
Like, Jalen Daniels.
Over Spencer Rattler?
Arkansas.
Over J.J. Jefferson, yeah.
Those are the only three spots, in my opinion. Now, you know, some people say Ole Miss. I'm not a believer.
Yeah.
They did everything they could to try to replace that start.
Do we know enough about Devin Leary? You can't really count on the incoming guys.
Because you don't know. Well, we just tried to do that last year.
Yeah.
They did the same thing, brought in the guy that everybody thought was going to be the guy at quarterback. And
Joe Milton has the game that got everybody fired up. I think he's going to be the trendy.
He can throw it 80 yards, but you lose some really good wide receivers.
And a team already tried it with Joe Milton. It didn't work out. I mean, that's not to say that it won't. But,
correct.
I thought you were talking the whole team. You were just talking quarterbacks. When you know what you got.
But even then, that's such an important part that it almost seeps into everything.
Oh, you're right.
And so I think LSU is probably the one that – most people feel, but I'm still not real sold on that roster after watching them here last year at Auburn, even though they won the West.
We have fewer star quarterbacks, proven star quarbacks than ever before.
Yeah, I think there's lots of talented. Last year was the year everybody said, oh, this is the year they're all going to be there, and there were some good ones. But you look at it this year and go, there's tons of quarterback questions across the league. Auburn has who knows? They're going to have an experienced guy, I believe, one of the two. You could have a really experienced quarterback. But there's going to be questions for most every one of these teams going into the season because of quarterback.
But you think about like a couple years ago, like you had Tua and Burrow and, I mean, Jake Fromm, I think, is one of the only guys to ever win a division three times. Like you had like guys with superstar, like all-time type credentials around the league this year. Jaden Daniels, your first team all-pre? I mean,
he would have to be for me. Daniels would have to be the first guy for me, I believe.
Need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join in here on the Wednesday Drive.
At OU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. 25 minutes away from 5 o'clock here on this Wednesday. One more segment with Jason Caldwell. And, yeah, we were talking during the break, and one thing we obviously want to get some thoughts on. I didn't know what all you guys talked about last week, but I'd seen that Auburn announcing its new pitching coach and adding another transfer. So it's been another busy time there in the transfer. We were talking about it a couple of weeks ago. I mean, this is the busy time as far as the transfer portal is considered for baseball.
It is, yeah. No, it's kind of a never ending portal thing now in baseball. Mm-hmm. It's like just kind of everything else, but starting with Everett Tiefert, it will be Auburn's pitching coach, but he's going to do some analytics. He's going to be on the road recruiting. This is the first of the third full time assistant that Auburn will be hiring. They hired Sparks for softball, who's very familiar. Hannah Sparks is somebody that I've been familiar with for a long time. Her brother Adam, she's shot photos for us for years.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's his sister. She's from Thomasville, played junior college ball, went to Oklahoma. So she'll be the third full-time assistant in softball. But Everett Tiefert for baseball, pitching background, obviously a guy that pitched in the major leagues, has been with the Chicago White Sox, has done a lot of things there. I think the analytics side of things for him, a guy that comes in and has been in a player personnel kind of role too, I think this is a good addition for Auburn. It's actually a guy that Butch Thompson wanted to hire last season. This didn't quite work out with the logistics and the way it wanted to go, and was able to get him this time around. But you know, Butch Thompson's a guy that's going to coach pitchers. I think he's going to get back to a little bit more of that himself as well. So this gives you kind of like we see in football a little bit in my mind. When you think about football, you think about Hugh Freeze and Phillip Montgomery, and they've got three or four people that have mm-hmm. coached quarterbacks in the past. You look with this one, you look at Butch and Everett Tiefert, Aaron Everett, who's doing some analytics thing in that role too, was a pitcher at Tennessee. So you got some guys that have coached pitchers. So you have some different looks and different voices. So I think it's going to be a little bit of a committee thing in pitching, but yeah, good addition there. And then, you know, baseball wise, they continue to just add talent. That's what you got to do. Another middle infielder. That's a talented player.
Sacred Heart.
Yeah. From Sacred Heart. And this was a guy that when Auburn started, I think when they started kind of targeting guys, Sam Mongeli is a guy that was probably at the top of the list for them. He was the Northeast Conference Player of the Year. He's a second-team All-American. Hit 402 with 20 home runs, 16 doubles, 54 RBIs, 22 stolen bases. Mm. And hit 304 as a the year before with only 5 home runs. And he said, hey, got bigger and stronger. And so, to me, this is a guy that could be a third baseman, could be a shortstop, could be a second baseman. They're bringing in Cooper Weiss, who's another infielder. So you look at those spots, you got some guys coming in, and can you get one of your freshmen? Colt Emerson is on campus, projected to be a first rounder. Can you grab him or Kevin McGonigal one? Those are two guys that right now both are projected to be first round or kind of those sandwich picks between the first and second round. If you can get one of those guys on campus, it would give you another really, really good option on the infield for a team that all of a sudden looks like it's going to have some pretty good depth on that infield position. But you've added, you know, a corner outfielder from Jacksonville State, added a couple of pitchers to the list.
Mm-hmm.
And then you bring back a Cooper McMurray and Ike Irish, Chris Stanfield. I think they're, for them now, it's one thing. Could you find a legit, you know, weekend starter, a guy that you right. can plug in? But I do think I think there's a chance that you could get Joseph Gonzalez back. I think that's a possibility.
You know, we talked about that a little bit last week. I think he's got maybe the most intriguing of everyone linked to Auburn. His next couple of days will be, because the draft's Sunday night. I mean, he's got a really intriguing couple of days where if he if the injury scares off enough teams that he slips out of the draft, because I don't know if it's a guarantee he gets selected.
No, even if you're 6th, 7th round, and right. you start going, you come back and you're healthy and you do what he's able to do.
Right, all you can be sudden, an all-conference type pitcher.
All of a sudden
pitcher.
You're a first or second right. rounder, and the bonus money is completely different for a guy like Joseph Gonzalez then. So that's one that bears watching.
And there are teams that just with the amount of options on the board will just write off a pitcher with a pressing injury concern.
Like they'll go, hey, no, not right now. Mm-hmm. Because especially in today's game where you're no longer are you going to have a guy that's going to be in the minor leagues for 4 or 5 years. Now there's on occasion there's those guys, but now those guys, they're trying to get those guys faster. They're trying to get those guys to the big leagues quicker. Especially people they pay money to.
Right. Even more.
Yes. Absolutely. And so it's changed the game. I mean, you know, nowadays you look up and, you know, I think we've talked about this before. When I'm growing up in you know, the early 80s and watching Major League Baseball, very rarely did you have a player that talked about his college baseball performance.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Horner was one of the guys I remember in Arizona State, and he came up really quickly.
Well, you had Bonds and Horner, and you'd have – some Arizona State and a few West Coast guys, it seemed like, or Texas.
You had a few.
Clemens, Texas, and Schiraldi.
Correct. But there weren't a ton of Greg Swindell.
Right.
And so you had some of those guys. But now you look up, and I mean, it's a large majority of guys now that played college baseball. Those are guys that are now making it. And so I think, you know, just, hey, we saw at the end of the College World Series. you saw what Dylan Crews saying, look, go to college. It's the best decision I've ever made. You know, all the thing, the development now at the collegiate level, to me, and the way you're taken care of, probably far surpasses what you get in minor leagues now, and the things you're doing. I think it's helped, and you know, we'll see if it helped Auburn last year get Ike Irish and Zach Crotchfield and Chris Stanfield. Those are guys that could have easily been drafted in normal years, and now we'll see if we'll help them get a couple of these guys.
I would love to see a like redemption season for Joseph Gonzalez. Right, I'd love to see him get to have a full healthy year in college baseball, and if he's not, if he doesn't like what he's hearing from the draft people, I would love to see him have another have a great season at Auburn, anchor the rotation.
You do that and have Joseph Gonzalez from 2022 back for this Auburn pitching staff. Add another piece. You got Carson Myers coming in from UAB. You've got your bullpen. You got Crotchfield. You got all your young guys back. You know, Will Cannon on the back end. Tanner Bauman. Like all of a sudden, you start looking at it going, that's pretty formidable when you if you have the front end of
if you've got the anchor right there.
Because we just saw it. We just saw an LSU pitching staff that when they left Auburn, just a couple of weeks left in the SEC regular season, was one pitcher, and you went,
yeah, it looked like a one-man staff.
But you saw the pieces, and they came together. For Auburn, the pieces came together, but they didn't have that one guy at the beginning to go dominate guys. When you have that, it changes everything.
Well, if you've got a sure thing, then the especially, other pieces are so much easier to
especially pick. An inning eater. If you got an inning eater like Joseph Gonzalez was, where you go, man, you're pretty sure he's going to get you six or seven at least, it changes everything. That's the one piece I think they're still looking for.
Jason Caldwell with us for a couple of more minutes. JC, you mentioned some of the goings-on with the with Auburn Undercover and the 15th anniversary. I mean, some people would say, well, yeah, this is the slow time, and it sort of is because there aren't visits going on. But as we've seen with the news that we talked about earlier with players making decisions, there are going to be more of those that are going to happen here, and we're also getting closer to the end of the dead period in Big Cat coming up.
Absolutely, yeah. It's going to be a busy time, especially toward the end of this month. I mean, we're 12 days away now from the start of SEC Media Day, so we're less than two weeks away from getting, you know, I would say actual news. There won't be a ton of actual news, but you'll get to hear from
coaches. There'll be quotes.
Get to hear from coaches and players, get to talk about other teams. We're previewing Auburn positions already now because we're less than a month away from the start of practice. I think it's going to be, you know, the first or second or so of August. Mm-hmm. So you got that time going on, recruiting going on. I think we had seven or eight stories up before 9 a.m. this morning because there's just things going on. And so we have a live chat going on right now. I wrote a story on Dana Marquez this morning and him his retirement where he's kind of transitioning. And so people can check that out. Nathan wrote a story on Peyton Thorne talking to a Michigan State assistant coach about him and kind of what he brings to the table. Really good stuff. So you can check all that out. And like I said, sign up for 75% off right now.
Great stuff. Jason, thanks a lot, man. Always great to have you here in the studio. And I know it's going to really get cranked up here for a little while so you can, you know, actually breathe for a few days.
Yeah, no, it's right around the 4th is a little bit of a slow time, but obviously on the 4th now. Now holidays, you know, you try to tell guys, hey, you want less eyeballs on it, do it on the 4th or on Christmas Day, but they still like to do it on those days. Of course, they're around family, so it makes a lot of sense. But, yeah, so lots of things going on there. Twitter, ITAT Jason. We'll be blowing and going here for the next few weeks as we get ready for media days.
Sounds good. Thanks, man.
Thanks.
Jason Caldwell from the 24/7 Network Auburn Undercover joining us here on the Wednesday Drive. As he does, we need to get to our final break here of hour number one. Love for you to join in. Come on in.
Did you know that electrical fires cause over 51,000 home fires in the U.S.
each year? 27502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Wednesday afternoon. Now it's going to be tough. Jason's gone. And it feels like a Monday. So the good thing is, only a couple of days before the end of the week.
Yeah, and we've got a you got a couple of minutes before the end of the hour. I want to hear about the trip to Pensacola and what kind of any memorable stuff or anything you really enjoyed doing.
No, the most memorable thing was the shark. I would
all right,
think.
There
I
you
mean,
go.
No, I mean we went and saw the new Indiana Jones.
Saw Indiana Jones. Okay.
Yeah, saw that on Thursday.
Okay,
that was opening night. But I mean, no, I mean, most of the time was...
Were you able to avoid bad weather?
We didn't get any rain at all.
Okay.
No rain at all. I mean, you know, and I was worried about that when we went down there. It had rained a lot the week before. But no, I mean, temperatures were, you know, mid-90s and breezy.
Any places people have to go when they go to Pensacola? Somebody, because you visited your fair share of times.
Yeah.
Someone who's maybe never been to Pensacola before, like what would you tell them they got to go do?
Well, I mean,
do or see.
We did go. I mean, not just because of that. We went over to Seville Quarter, which has been around forever. And some of those establishments, Rosie O'Grady's, Lily Marlene's,
okay,
have been there for a long time. They've got the piano bar, the dueling piano bar there at Rosie's, which is a lot of
fun. So for the Sun Belt tournament, they have a shuttle that takes people from the Civic Center to a couple of different spots around town.
Where are some of the places they go?
Seville Quarter's.
Yeah, Seville Quarter is not very far from
one of the drop-offs.
The heart of downtown.
That was
right there.
Had the Trojans won that game where the other team used six players, I think we were playing.
Oh, yeah, you could have gone.
I think we were going.
You could have gone, and they were doing karaoke. Never got around to the karaoke.
Oh, yeah,
I think
no,
that
we
was
were,
at Lily Marlene's.
Yeah, we were headed to Seville Quarter maybe after that game, but the mood changed, and we decided to
pack up. Well, the time of year when you're
home
there, it's a little better because a lot of the places also have open-air bars, you know, courtyards and things like that. A little hot for me. I mean, after spending most of the day on the beach, I wanted to be in air conditioning. So, I mean, we were inside for the piano bar. But, I mean, the end of the alley, that's another one of the bars there that's usually live music. And I really felt for the small group that was out there playing because it was probably 93 degrees when they were playing with a humidity of about 90%.
All right, so here's what they do. They provide free trolleys Friday through so when the Sun Belt is in Pensacola,
mm-hmm,
they provide trolley service 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. from the Pensacola Bay Center to four downtown bars that are participating in this. So they take people to Perfect Plain Brewing, Casks and Flights, O'Reilly's.
Yeah, O'Reilly. O'Reilly's.
And Seville Quarter. Uh-huh. Like those are the four stops on the trolley, which I think is
O'Reilly's is the Irish pub that's right there at the corner.
Yeah. For a conference basketball tournament, that's a pretty smart idea to take people, you know, right to where they need to go and presumably pick people up if they need to go from the bar to the arena to watch their team too. I mean, that thing's making
yeah, it's better than them trying to drive. Too,
yeah, drive or walk. You know, yeah, in that situation.
And you do have some of those down there become one way all of a sudden. If you're not paying attention, you're driving along and wait, the road just stopped and it's one way in the other direction. So you need to be careful and know what you're doing.
It's good.
No, we had to hit the barbecue joint.
There you go.
And did it again. I'm trying to remember.
Don Dunn would be proud of the fact that you stopped for some barbecue.
Yeah.
Although it wasn't Don's. But
no,
I mean,
but I mean, it was about as good as we found.
You know what?
I've heard from
multiple people who have gone to sample Don's wares since we had him on.
Well,
I think he
absolutely should.
And at least one person told me, they were like, you know what? Hearing him talk about it, you can tell this guy knows what he's doing.
Oh, he does.
When it comes time to throw down on the grill.
Oh, yeah. So no, it was great. Probably, gained 5 pounds or so. And then decided there's no sense in worrying about any of that with a fourth coming up because yesterday was another another food fest. Go,
I did check out the city's fireworks show last night. I ventured.
We heard it.
Okay, so I figured it was close enough to my place to where I would go to somewhere near the duck and just grab a parking spot and check things out. I was able to sneak into, I always know it as the former Bruno's, but it's the parking lot.
Yeah, the parking lot across from Duck Sam.
That has
right.
the Auburn HR and the groom transportation people. Mm-hmm. You know, so people, I think people leave their cars there when they take the bus to and from the airport. Sure. But I was able to sneak a spot in there and had, yeah, great view of another outstanding fireworks show.
They're always, they do a great job.
By the city, excellent work with that this weekend.
I think we've got time. Yeah, let's get to the phone, and John is up. Hey, John.
Hey, good afternoon. I got a question for you, Bill.
All right.
How was the Indiana Jones movie? I haven't been yet.
It was an Indiana Jones movie. It was at times you have to suspend belief a little bit because he's doing some tricks that most humans shouldn't be able to do. But I mean, it was fun. It was a fun movie, very much in the vein of the first three.
Is the de-aging distracting?
It was impressive.
At all, they did
it was okay. More impressive. Okay. I've seen a lot of them try to do that, and I would go, man, that doesn't look good. I believed the de-aging more than I did some of the other things.
Because yeah, I mean, The Irishman is a movie I think people point to where they tried to shave some years off of Pesci and De Niro.
Uh-huh.
And they still kind of move like they're their current age, even when they're supposed to be 25, 30.
They did a pretty good job with that. So no, I'd say I'd definitely encourage you. If you like the Indiana Jones movies, you'll like this one.
Oh yeah, I think my favorite was the first one, and then the Last sure. Crusade.
Yes, and I agree.
I think all the first three are home runs, and the fourth one gets a bad rap, but you know, because there are some goofy moments, but it's got. The fourth one's got some great sequences too.
He references
those first three, I think, are all
and he references instances in each of the prior episodes in the movie, which is cool.
One other thing, or I got a couple things if I don't forget. But
tell you what, do you want to hang on because the music just started? Do you want to hang on for the top of hour number two?
Sure.
All right, stick around.
We'll be right back after the top of the hour update. Hour number two coming up here on the Wednesday Drive.
Capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls, the regular crew here. Our thanks to Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover and the 24/7 Network joining us in hour number one. When we ended hour number one, we were talking with John. We ran out of time there, so John hung on. So let's get right to the Kia of Auburn hotline. John, you still with us?
Yes, sir.
Well, sure. Well, go ahead. What else you got?
All right. I was going to say, this is the first day I've been able to listen in the past probably 10 days. I normally listen all the way home from Montgomery via the TuneIn app on my phone, and I have been unable to victor y'all in. Is that something on my end or your end?
You're saying that the TuneIn apps had issues?
Yes, sir. Every other station is playing except for 106.7 out of Auburn. So
right. I don't know if you know, we'll pass that along. There have been some reports of we fixed. So we had issues earlier last month with the podcast, and I think maybe I don't want to pull behind the curtain too much. I think maybe we switched some things up behind the scenes, and I will pass along that you're having trouble accessing us on the TuneIn app. I will say that you should ESPNAU.com. You can stream the show live. I know it's not as convenient as you, and we'll try to get things working on every service. But I know that you can you can listen live to the website stream at ESPNAU.com.
I've got you pulled up on Alexa right now at the house.
Oh, right on.
Oh, good. Very okay.
Cool. But I was just curious about that. And my last thing for today was: did y'all happen to see the article that the departing 50-year senior softball player wrote to AL.com?
I didn't know. Did she write that to AL.com, or was it something she posted on social media?
Yeah, I think it was just a series of posts to her Twitter and Instagram that was then written into a story by AL.com.
Okay. Either way, it didn't, I don't know.
No, it doesn't shine a good light on the program. No, not at all.
But it was. It seemed to be a pretty damning and telling that I mean, she was basically saying that the coaches were not interested in as people, just athletes, and it was kind of disheartening, and I didn't know if that might lead to an explanation of why so many of our players have transferred recently.
I'm sure that doesn't go unnoticed.
So, yeah, it was just kind of shocking to me that she would even get out there and say that, because a lot of people feel things, but they hold them in, but for her to actually come out there and say it and then forego a fifth year mm-hmm. of playing ball for free, that's a...
No, I agree. I understand. I mean, you're right. That's hard to just... I'm just supposing, but I would imagine that's pretty hard to just ignore.
So, well, that's all I've got. Like I said, good to hear from y'all, and I'll continue to watch or listen to the rest of the show.
Hey, good hearing from you, John. Appreciate the call and the patience hanging on there.
So what John's talking about, by the way, it's Carly McConaughey. Uh-huh. Is the she was a second baseman for the Auburn softball team, had an extra year of eligibility because of the COVID year, but decided she's not going to utilize it. She's going to step away from the sport. And then in the post that she tweeted, which I believe has been deleted since posting it. I should check on that for sure. But I know she tweeted. I guess I can check on it right now by clicking to see. No, yeah, she has since deleted these posts, but she posted at the time.
It was, yeah, it obviously you're limited to characters, so there were about five or six.
A couple different tweets. Quote: I will not be taking a fifth year. This threat is not directed toward Auburn University. I love Auburn my whole heart. Every single girl that is part of the Auburn softball program. It is sad when a young girl who has played the sport for 18 years of her 22-year life has no interest or desire in playing a fifth year. This is what happens when you play for a program where if you fail, you are immediately benched, a program where you aren't pursued, a program where you aren't looked at from an athletic perspective, just a personal perspective, unquote. And then she, later in the post, discusses that they, as in student-athletes in the future, deserve better deserve more support than they are currently getting. I'm paraphrasing without wanting to read the entire post. But, and she mentions that she closes with the thought that playing another game provides her with anxiety, unquote. So, I mean, it paints a troubling picture mm-hmm. Inside the program, you know, especially if she's not alone in this view. I mean, it's troubling enough if you have one player who feels that way. But if it's widespread, and as John questioned, you know, maybe it's contributing to players deciding to leave and play elsewhere in the portal. I mean, and that's something that Auburn University is going to have to seriously look at.
Oh, there's no question about it. You're right. And I had seen that while we were gone last week and thought, yeah, I just that doesn't look good. Doesn't shine a positive light at all on the program. Appreciate the call, John. 334-321-1390. That is the Kia of Auburn hotline. Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one. We'd love for you to join in. That you can call us or you can text us.
You can also text the show 334-564-1840. That's the Drive text box. Southeastern Industrial Contractors also provides the sponsorship for the podcast, which you can get at ESPNAU.com. But they also sponsor the text box, which is open 24/7, 334-564-1840.
Hour number two of the Drive brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. A couple of things, notes to pass along, something we didn't mention in hour number one. Auburn, had said a week or so ago they were close to selling out of football season tickets. Today, Auburn announcing, about an hour and a half ago, announcing that they have indeed sold out of public season tickets for the 2023 season with 63,500 tickets sold. Now, this doesn't include student tickets, which have not been dispersed yet, but there's never a problem selling all of the student season tickets. And this will be a new record for Auburn in season tickets sold because there have been changes as far as the number of tickets available for visitors. The record prior to this year had been 62,900 season tickets. Before the 2014 season, allotments have gone down for visitors because the allotment for Auburn to other schools has gone down. If you'd noticed, it at times it's a little tougher to get some road tickets because schools are trying to sell more tickets, more season tickets, and thus not allowing as many visitors per game.
Do you suspect that a significant portion of the significant's a tough one. You think there are some fan bases of other teams that are buying
golden season tickets? Well, I'll tell you
this. To guarantee themselves a ticket to a game at Auburn?
The first time Auburn sold out of full season tickets to a large stadium, once Jordan-Hare had been, had gone from Cliff Air Stadium to Jordan-Hare Stadium, first time it sold, I was an assistant ticket manager. And that was 1989. And that was when Alabama was coming.
Something happened.
When Alabama was coming to Jordan-Hare Stadium, Alabama was coming to Auburn for the first time. And that year, we tried, but, I'd say 1,500 of the season tickets were bought by Alabama fans wanting to be there and expecting to come in and win at Jordan-Hare Stadium. So I think it's interesting because the release from Auburn says that as a result, the single game tickets are not available for Georgia, but there are a limited number which will be made available to Tigers unlimited season ticket holders who have enough priority to buy some Alabama tickets. Now, it used to be, yes, when of course, back in, until a few years ago, Alabama would be one home year and Georgia would be the home team the next, would be at home the next year, and that helped sell your season tickets. I never got the feeling there was an inordinate number of Georgia fans buying season tickets. But now with the word that there are no tickets available for Georgia, there are a few tickets left for Alabama. Yes, I would say some Georgia fans are buying Auburn season tickets, feeling it's worth the investment, anything they can get back for any of the other ball games. And when you've got Georgia and Alabama on the season ticket, if you're able to do that without contributing, now you're probably not going to get great tickets. Season tickets are $475. So if you get Georgia and Alabama on there, you've got a chance of recouping a lot of your expense if you keep one and sell one. If the ticket is not just the worst ticket in the world.
Let alone whatever you decide to do with Ole Miss.
Ole Miss, Mississippi State.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
The opener. I mean, there could be some, some
sure interest in that.
There. Yeah. So.
So I mean, I don't know that it's a tremendously high number, but I would say there's a chance with both Georgia and Alabama on the home season ticket out of those 63,500, probably under 60,000 of those are just Auburn fans.
Yeah, and I've heard that in the last 6-7 years, and maybe longer than that, but certainly in the last 6 or 7 years, you've seen an increased number of Georgia fans at any road game that team plays.
The larger that number grows.
Yeah, absolutely right. And so, yeah, I think this year you could see quite a few situations where, boy, there's a lot of Georgia fans in the house. I mean, they play Auburn and I think they go to Tennessee.
As
well. I mean, they got a couple of games where, there's going to be a lot of interest.
And those are the only two contests I think they have this year.
Seems like it.
So why wouldn't they want to go?
Seems like it.
All right, let's get to the Kia of Auburn hotline, 334-321-1390. And Cameron is up next. Hey, Cameron.
Hey, guys. How are we doing today?
Pretty good.
Good to hear from you, Cameron. Good.
Yeah, thank you. Kind of wanted to voice my opinion about the I don't know if y'all saw it on Twitter where Cam Coleman announced on Twitter where he was committing to the Texas A&M.
Oh yeah, we talked about that at the top. With Jason Caldwell.
Yeah, I mean I'm not upset. I'm not distraught about it. I know I'm sure that there are some Auburn fans that are just beside themselves that we couldn't get him. But I didn't know A&M was on Cam Coleman's list, but
Jason Caldwell said he didn't, he would have thought at best they were third. Yeah. So I mean, and Jason is on it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and so kind of going from that, kind of want to get y'all's opinion on the linebacker commit we got today. I think his name's the D'Angelo Barber.
Yeah, DJ Barber.
Kind of want to get y'all's opinion on how one of the main questions I'm seeing a lot on Auburn social media is can this year's Auburn team like produce the next 1,000-yard receiver? Because if I'm not mistaken, I think Auburn's only had 2 1,000-yard receivers. One was Terry Beasley. It was Terry Beasley, and then there was one other guy from like the late 90s that was like another 1,000-yard receiver. So kind of want to get y'all's opinion on if Auburn can get another 1,000-yard receiver from this coach staff, and I'll take a listen. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, what's crazy is that, I mean, that's a fairly common thing now with the way the offenses have changed as much as they have over the years. But, yeah, it had been tough. I think Darvin Adams was like 3 yards short. Seemed like he had 997. It's been very difficult for Auburn. Auburn has, you know, first of all, hasn't thrown the ball as much, and they a lot of times haven't had that go-to receiver even in years when they didn't do that. But I would think if one of the guys,
it's a lot of yards. I mean,
when you're looking at 12 games, though, I mean, even just in your regular season, if you average 83 yards a game receiving, you're at 1,000 yards. So it's not that unbelievable. I mean, right now, who would you think would be Auburn's go-to receiver? Javarius Johnson's the most proven at Auburn of these guys. What about a Shane Hooks?
And Javarius, granted, it wasn't all his fault, but I mean, Javarius had 26 catches last year,
right?
And I would love to see this team take a step forward throwing the football, and maybe several steps forward in pass efficiency. A 1,000-yard receiver this year? I would probably lean towards no.
I don't know. I mean, it just depends. I mean, the thing is, there are less proven guys if one can step up. If Auburn can have two guys, I mean, the way – just think back in 2009 when, you know, you didn't know anything about the receivers. Auburn had no proven receivers.
And Auburn had guys that had been on last year's team in 2009.
Right.
Like Terrell Zachary steps up and has a great season.
Zachary and Adams.
Yeah.
I mean, you had Terrell and Darvin that had been on the team, and they got nothing.
I think Emery Blake shows up as a true freshman and contributes as well. In 09. You're right. I mean, that's the thing that can happen when a team makes drastic changes offensively. Didn't you see that a little bit 16-17? Doesn't Jarrett Stidham show up and
yeah.
a bunch of receivers that Ryan Davis goes on to have a record-breaking season in Stidham's first year. So no, I wouldn't rule it out. I would.
Oh yeah, Darvin had 997 in 09 and 963 in 10.
What was the Ryan? If you could pull up Ryan Davis 16 versus 17.
All right, I'm looking at year by year leaders. There's 741, 716 was Ricardo Lewis in 15. Tony Stevens in 16 had 487. Then Ryan Davis had 815 in 17.
And I think Davis in 17 set the single season reception record, not the yardage record, but Ryan Davis 84 catches in that 17 season was a. Was a record. So Ryan, by the way, think about this. Javarius had 26 catches last year. Ryan had 25 the year before Jarrett Stidham shows up and Ryan jumps up to 84 in a single year. And those are two guys that aren't too different skill set-wise either, right, Bill? I mean, Javarius Johnson and Ryan Davis are quick off the line of scrimmage, first step, maybe not home run hitters and big play threats as much as really solid underneath, space creators.
I think Terry Beasley is the only receiver in Auburn history to ever have 1,000 yards
wow.
receiving. He had 1,051 in 70. Like I said, Darvin had 997, and I know he was the closest at that time. I don't think anybody's. Yeah. I don't think anybody's hit the 1,000-yard mark, and yes, that's a lot of yards. I'm just saying, in the college game today, it's not unbelievable to see a receiver with
it
a 1,000
yards. It'd be a really big step forward for Auburn. I mean, to have a receiver in consideration, right? I mean, would be, you know, if you're in the running, because right now, like we said, I mean, leading Tank Bigsby led the team in catches last year with 30. Of the guys coming back of your receivers, Javarius last year with 26. It would be a not out of the question. I mean, you've seen things like that happen, but it would be a big step forward.
334-321-1390. We need to get to our first break of hour number two. Love for you to join in here on the Wednesday Drive.
So you want to know what it's like to be a college student at Southern Union?
334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Wednesday afternoon. All right, so we'll toss this out to our audience. Who do you think will be Auburn's leading receiver? Does Auburn have will they have a go-to guy? Who will be their leading receiver? I mean, I've seen, all right, and as a matter of fact, I saw Jason answering this. He was talking about they've got a Q&A going on there at Auburn Undercover. And one of the questions was about, what they had seen from the guys working out. And Jason and Nathan and maybe Christian as well all said that Peyton Thorne had looked really good just while they saw him throwing some, and that Shane Hooks didn't have a uniform on, but, boy, he looked like a big-time receiver. So, I mean, That's all anybody has to go on right now. You can look at film from Jackson State. You can look at film from Shorter?
North Texas.
Yeah.
Can't even look at Caleb Burton's film, right? I don't know if he played.
Not in college. Yeah. Not unless you got some film of practice.
No, it is. I think projecting Auburn's receivers on an individual level, thinking like, oh, yeah, this guy's going to do, like, I have no idea what it shakes
Jair
out.
Jair Shorter had ridiculous numbers. He didn't catch that many passes, though.
Between, how about this? Between Javarius Johnson, Jair Shorter, Shane Hooks, Camden Brown, Coy Moore,
you got to put Nick Gardner in there. Caleb caught 60-something passes 1 year, didn't he, for Marcus Davis?
Caleb Burton and Nick Gardner. Between those seven, I don't know who finishes one and who finishes seventh.
And if there's not that much difference, then the ball's spread out and nobody's got any chance of doing anything like Cameron was asking, could Auburn have somebody catch? You have to be an every-down guy that is counted on all the time to be able to have 1,000 yards receiving.
Right, and I left out guys. Malcolm Johnson and Jay Fair and Amari Kelly.
Amari Kelly, the incoming
receiver, the incoming freshman. Mm-hmm. J.C. Hart could be potentially in that group. Like we don't know, but I think it would be great to see someone separate himself to the level, be so undeniable that he's on the field a lot and catching 75, 80 passes this year and a big play threat. Hard to stick your neck out and say, it's going to be this guy.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, that's what I was pointing out about 2009.
You
had no idea that Darvin Adams, Jarrell Zachary are all of a sudden going to be guys that catch 50 passes.
Is Burton the top guy from a recruiting standpoint? Like, was Burton the top recruit of the receivers?
Coming out of high school? Coming out of high school? All the guys? Yes.
I would think so.
Yes.
And yet, I mean, but I have no idea what Auburn is getting in Caleb Burton, except the guy who was a very exciting receiver coming out of Texas. A
very exciting prospect when he Ohio State.
Yeah, when he picked Ohio State. So, I mean, but that's another guy where, I mean, maybe it clicks and he's, and he's able to produce in a big way. Like, that is it is wide open at wide receiver in a way that's exciting, but also I can understand why it can make some people nervous.
I was trying to think, did I leave anybody else? Did we leave anybody out? No, that's pretty much it. I mean, there's like 10 or 11 guys, and we mentioned them all. I mean, probably I wonder who was the second most highly touted guy. Caleb Burton, by far, I think, was the most highly touted guy.
Are you losing confidence that Sorey is?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would think that you just sort of follow and see where he winds up, see if he's at a junior college or something like that. Because
don't want to rule it out.
But now that we're as Jason Caldwell said, less than a month away from the start of practice, it's less likely for him. Haven't heard anything on Jameson Travis either lately. Although we had heard that it was a college credit or two, a junior college credit or two, and those usually are more easily recovered than high school credits. So. Yeah, so I've got an asterisk by the Quavius story, so don't really know, but yeah, that's a really good question, and I don't know. I wonder if the coaches. I mean, I'm sure they have an idea, but you don't know until they get out there, and somebody can make a huge jump from the spring to the fall.
Yeah, I mean, to bet big on one of the incoming transfers is dangerous because I don't know if any of them. I mean, all of them could.
You haven't seen them, yeah.
All of them could be in the rotation 3 weeks into the season.
Mm-hmm.
Any of them could be out, right? Depending on how the other guys play. I mean, and then there's the income. I mean, there's the holdovers. There's the guys from last year's team who have experience here in the program. But one would think it's a everything's wide open. With
it
a new
should
coaching
be,
staff.
Especially. Especially if Peyton Thorne is making that push and could be the starting quarterback. Because he wasn't here this spring either. So, I mean, all the chemistry that these guys are trying to build is going on right now. I mean, they didn't have a chance to be out there and be coached by Philip Montgomery and Hugh Freeze.
And there's a chance three or four of the top options are guys who weren't on last year's team. Like, I mean, there's a way that it breaks through and Shorter and Hooks or, as advertised, Mardner, Fairweather, who's not a receiver, but Rivaldo's going to be a target.
Sure.
He
may be the guy. Who knows?
But no. And then the other side of that is, Javarius, Coy,
mm-hmm.
Camden Brown.
Yeah, and then Fair and Kelly, who were freshmen last year.
And Malcolm Johnson Jr., who was
Camden Brown.
Yeah, I mean, there's
all the three of the freshmen.
It could shake out in all kinds of different ways. But that is one of the positions to really watch going into this fall practice in a couple of weeks.
I mean, does that not sort of make you go when we get back to the what we started talking about at the beginning of the show and what Cameron was talking about, and that's Cam Coleman. It's like there are less roadblocks at Auburn as far as, well, here's a guy that I'm surely going to have to really fight for getting playing time, because there's no proven guys. There's one.
Yeah.
One. Javarius Johnson's the most proven guy at Auburn, and that's not Cam Coleman's position. He's a 6'4 guy.
And Javarius is proven. Is Javarius so proven that he couldn't be beaten out in the fall by a new arrival or someone who? Yeah, I mean, he's somebody. I would guess that he's going to play more than any other receiver on the team, but that's a guess.
I would too. I'd probably have the same guess.
That's a guess, and I don't know. I mean,
I surely can't say, yeah, I'm going to put this much on that.
Like, how about this? Last year's team. We remember it seemed clear that of the options on last year's team, you were better off giving the ball to Tank, Jarquez, and Javarius than just about anybody else.
Right.
I don't know, because so many new guys are here. I don't know what the difference is. And some of the other guys have improved. I mean, it's a running back, not a receiver, but the unanimously almost the most talked about, most improved player this offseason is Damari.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, I don't know how much better Jarquez is than Damari and Batie and some of the other options there in the backfield. At receiver, I don't know how much better Javarius is anymore than this group. I knew how much better he was than most of the available options last year, but...
Yeah, and then you got Jeremiah Cobb coming in.
And then you got Jeremiah Cobb coming in.
Yeah. All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Still plenty of time for you to join in on the Kia of Auburn hotline, 334-321-1390.
Be a part of the drive. Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final 20 minutes or so here on this Monday. I knew I'd do it.
Bam.
I knew I'd do it. It feels like one.
It does feel
it's
like a Monday.
No, it's Brian a Wednesday.
No Brian Matthews. We gotta see if Brian Matthews he did double duty last week.
He did.
We gotta see if Brian Matthews is up for another one this week, or if he just wants to take the next couple days off. Understandable either way.
That's right. Because you'll need Brian on Monday.
No,
I'm not taking. I'm having to take a day off, but I promise you, folks, it's not a vacation.
You're on assignment.
Oh God.
And
yeah.
And the. And we'll have no Ferguson this week either. Justin's enjoying the beach down in Destin. I believe he's leaving. I think first thing tomorrow morning. Justin's headed down for a weekend on the Gulf Coast as well. So we'll
I don't know that I've ever seen the tanned Ferg.
I know. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see a burned Ferg.
Nah, I got some sun.
Yeah,
I'm not
you
burned.
Did get some
I'm
sun. No, you're looking. Yeah, yeah. You're looking.
Well, that's
like bronze.
That's that little bit of
Brazilian.
A little bit of no, it's a little bit of Indian.
Oh, okay. I was gonna say
it turns a little brown.
That's the Brazilian childhood.
It might be
coming out.
Might be. You never know. All right, let's get back to the Kia of Auburn. I think John's back with us again. Hey, John.
Hey, John.
Hey, I apologize about calling back, but did y'all happen to see the article that just came out?
Oh, I may not have.
Yeah, what do you
I've
got?
Been checking my email, but I didn't see an article about what?
Auburn just hired an assistant softball coach.
I think I saw that yesterday.
It came out today on the 5th.
Okay. Well, I mean,
yeah.
No, I guess Jason mentioned that a little earlier, so that's why I was thinking maybe it was yesterday.
Is this Hannah Sparks?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, he was. As a matter of fact, Jason said he knew her because her brother had been a photographer for Jason and Mark for Inside the Auburn Tigers. She's a native of Alabama, went to junior college, and then played college ball at Oklahoma.
Oh, is this Adam's sister?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah. So this was announced, I think Monday night, Mickey Dean announced something about this, actually. But no, she's somebody. I follow Adam Sparks on social media. I encourage any Auburn fan to follow Adam Sparks on social media. He's a photographer who does great work and posts some beautiful stuff involving the program. His sister was a softball player at Oklahoma, also played some time at Pearl River Community College before going to Oklahoma. And yeah, I think it's really exciting that she's joining the program. She's she seems like a really bright, talented softball player who's beginning a coaching career.
Yeah, they said she was an assistant, a volunteer assistant with Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
won a national championship in 2017, and her being from I think you said Thomasville, Alabama.
Right.
That could go a long ways into I don't know, but I'm just maybe that could go a long way into fixing some of those other issues we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, you hope so. Yeah, sorry I didn't mention that a while ago. I didn't realize. Yeah, Jason had mentioned it earlier, and I thought maybe you'd heard him talking about that. I thought maybe that spurred your call.
I should have mentioned that she's a Raider, too, which is important. She's a Northwest Florida State college Raider. That's where she was before. She went to she grew up in Thomasville, Alabama.
Mm-hmm. Which is down, yeah, southwest Alabama.
Played at Northwest Florida State College out of high school before transferring to Oklahoma. She's been, she was coaching at Pearl River Community College before returning to Oklahoma on a volunteer basis. But that was her, she spent three seasons as hitting and catching coach and recruiting coordinator for Pearl River Community
Good.
College, which is a quality mm-hmm. softball program in the Mississippi Junior College ranks. But I have to root for... I have to root for people with the Niceville connection, the Northwest Florida State connection. I'll have someone who's asked. I have met Chad Baker Mazzara since the last time we did a show.
Oh, yeah?
And I can confirm, big fan of Danny's Fried Chicken in Niceville, Florida, just like me. So it's great to have to Chad Baker and all the Northwest Florida State Raiders. You know, Tay Waller's on the War Ready.
Yeah, I saw that.
Tay Waller's going to be on the tournament team.
On the TBT, yeah.
So does if we got anyone coming in, does that mean Corisone is going leaving?
I do not know.
I wonder what change they're going to make if you know on the other side of this.
So, all right. Well, like I said, I just saw that, and that was news to me. So I apologize if we replay all the.
No problem, John. Good question. We probably didn't talk about it enough for something that's pretty exciting addition to the softball coaching staff.
All right. I appreciate it. Have a good afternoon.
Appreciate it, John. 334-321-1390. Who was next?
Matt
is up next on the Key of Auburn Hotline. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, guys. Got a trivia question for you guys.
Oh, here we go.
All right. What do I win?
All right. Well, you can be happy.
That would be a change. That's good.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
All right,
you got?
So when was the – I think I've called in and asked this question a couple times before, just want to jog your memories. When was the last time that Auburn had a first-round receiver drafted from Auburn?
Oof. You got to go back a ways, don't you? It wasn't.
I know Terry Beasley was by the Niners.
Wasn't the fellow in the 90s, was it? It wasn't Frank
Sanders?
Was it Frank Sanders?
Chris Woods.
Wow, I'd forgot. Okay, yeah. I did not realize that Chris.
Going on 40 years.
Yeah. I didn't realize Chris. And Chris didn't get many passes thrown his way. He was out there to block for Coach Dye.
Yeah, I know. But anyway, so all of our rivals, LSU, Georgia, Bama, they've all had receivers. Hopefully that Hugh Freeze with his Treadwell and A.J. Brown and D.K. Metcalf can change that, because 40 years is a long time for the caliber program of Auburn is.
You're not
to have a drought of 40 years from a first-round receiver. I feel like if we were to have a Justin Jefferson – or a just fill in the blank, they would shatter all the receiver records that Auburn has, just because we've been a running football team for the last while.
Yeah, that's what I was saying a little while ago when Cameron was calling in. I wasn't sure, and I went back and checked, and yeah, Terry Beasley is Auburn's 1,000-yard receiver.
And Hugh Freeze has a track record of being able to point to guys and say, you know, look at what they've accomplished. But for Auburn, you know, I think it's difficult for, you know, it's chicken or the egg, right? Do receivers want to be, do they want to be the first one to do all of these things, or do they want to go somewhere that has a, you know, that has established they're sending wide receivers?
But again, what we were wondering about is how many receivers have put up great numbers under Jimbo Fisher at
A&M. Texas A&M. I mean, that's Jimbo Fisher just landed what sparked this conversation was Jimbo Fisher and A&M landing Cam Coleman out of Phoenix City over the weekend. But no, that is Auburn has had, and Frank Sanders was a second round pick. Auburn is and Auburn has had, I believe Slayton was also drafted relatively high. Sammy Coates was, I think, a second or third round pick. Auburn's had some receivers taken earlier in the draft, but not, like you said, in the first round. It's been nearly 40 years. I believe you got to go back to the mid 80s, right? For Chris Woods. I mean, you got to go into the
Chris was either came in with Coach Dyer the year before, so it was 84, 85 in there.
And Tuberville had some receivers who carved out careers for themselves. I remember Ben Obamanu played in the league longer than folks thought he would necessarily. But no, you didn't have anybody break into have the kind of career or the kind of, because that's the other thing about measuring it on the draft, right? They also draft on potential rather than what you. I mean, it's nice.
Well,
to
that's
have
what
a,
Chris Wood was. I mean, Chris. Yeah. Like I said, Chris didn't catch a ton of passes at Auburn when he was. Yeah, he was taken with the 28th pick by the Raiders in 84.
You could have a situation where a guy gets injured and only plays one game, but the draft loves his potential so much that he goes in the first round. But it's like, what to what end was that for your program, right? Is it so? I mean, what you'd love. I mean, how long has it been, Bill, since Auburn had first team all conference receiver? Like end of the season, Auburn receiver goes first team all conference.
Golly, that's been a while.
I mean, the draft is important, but you know, I think what's been lacking is, you know, having
what's
that
more important is that they're great at this level,
ace type production right now. And but that's not to say, because that's been a problem too, right? When you don't have a guy who's first team all conference, when it's been decades probably.
Yep.
Since you're looking at that, it's like, we'll see if Hugh Freeze can turn the tide. He seems to understand how important it is to have superstars at the wide receiver position.
No question about that. That's a great question. Appreciate the call, Matt. 334-321-1390. We'll get one more before we get to our final break of the day. And Jerry is next. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, guys. Glad to hear you back.
Oh, it's good to be back, although I could have, you know, lounged on the beach for another day or two.
Oh, I bet. A minute or two. I love all the football talk and great info. I just got to give a shout-out to the Braves.
Unbelievable, isn't it? They had their latest streak snapped yesterday, but they've won, what is it, like 21 out of 24 now?
They were 21-4 in June. So,
yeah,
you know, they're just kicking butt. First in all the offensive
categories. Oh, they're killing the ball, absolutely. I mean, they're doing this without, you know, half the guys they thought would be in their rotation.
I mean, the Marlins, yeah. The Marlins have 50. I mean, the Marlins are one of three teams in the National League with 50 wins, and the Braves are eight games up in the division right now. If the Marlins were as expected, the Braves would be 12-13 up on the Phillies, and that would be the second place team in the division right now, and it would be, you know, they'd be distancing themselves. The Mets are 18 games back.
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to the All-Star games in a week.
I had somebody ask. Yeah, go ahead.
I thought this was the toughest conference. You know, the NL East was the toughest conference in baseball before the season started, but it worked out that way.
Well, yeah, I mean, you got two teams that are fighting. You'll get three teams fighting for the playoffs in the NL East. It's just been Atlanta's been considerably better than everyone in baseball except the Rays.
And now they get to play each other.
And now they play each other in what feels like, I mean, the baseball postseason is so crazy, so you can't, you know. But, yeah, right now feels like a World Series preview.
Yeah, I can't wait. And I really like this realignment of the schedules where every team plays every other team, you know, across leagues.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, you get some matchups that you never saw before, and it's great.
Yeah. It works good. Well, go Braves.
Oh, yeah, they are. I mean, and Ronald Acuna, first player in Major League history with 20 homers and 40 steals before the All-Star break.
You think the Mets tear it down?
Yeah, I think they have to.
Now here's the thing, though. Tearing it down, I mean, you could nibble around the edges. You could see maybe Scherzer or Verlander.
I mean, yeah, those guys. I mean, you're not building. You're not building for the future with those guys.
The teardown. Do you know what I'm about to say?
It's going to be Alonso and Lindor.
The teardown is Alonso. Alonso's got a year and a half left to team control. Would a contender think, hey, we're a Pete Alonso away from changing our fortunes in the postseason? Let's give a lot to the Mets.
Let's give a lot of the farm system.
Let's give a lot of the farm to the Mets to take Pete Alonso off their hands, with the understanding that maybe they're not going to sign him to the lucrative deal that some other former Mets, or maybe they will in a year and a half when he's a free agent. But you know, the best thing for them right now would be, with a year and a half left before Alonso goes to free agency, do you push him to a team that's got a better chance of winning right now and thinks Alonso could help them? I mean, what would that do for an Arizona or a Miami?
I was going to say Miami. I think about him going home.
Yeah.
Going back to Florida, they've got some prospects.
If you're the Angels and you're trying to convince Otani, and I know they had a bad day yesterday.
Yeah.
Trout went on the IL. Rendon and Otani both left the game with injuries.
Yep.
It's a bad day.
Otani's a blister, so
and the Rendon thing might be a blip too. We'll see. Although maybe not.
Him staying healthy has been tough lately.
But that'd be another one, right? Where it's like, You're pushing your chips in right now.
I'm just wondering if the Angels are going to be a little gun shy about let's bring in another huge.
You want them in the National League too?
Well, that's all right. Depends on the prospects.
That's true. That's true. It depends on what they get in return.
Yep. But yeah, baseball is fun. I think a lot of people enjoying baseball, not just Braves fans because the Braves are doing so well. I think a lot of people are enjoying the way baseball's being played.
Yeah. You know,
the pace has really helped.
I saw
baseball finally did something right.
There was an Orioles Yankees game this weekend on the Yankees local TV channel on the YES that did. It's 15 years or something since a baseball game on July 4th weekend rated like that. I mean, there's little pieces of evidence that. Around the country, people are a little bit more excited for their Major League Baseball teams, especially around Atlanta. Because they got the best one.
Well, and the Orioles, too, though. I mean, that probably had a little bit to do with it. It was the Yanks and Orioles. It was the Orioles.
Yeah, well, because the Yankees fans aren't
They're not crazy.
They're not thrilled about the way things are going right now.
The Big Apple ain't having
Aaron,
a blast.
Aaron Judge last year?
Probably.
Next year?
Huh?
Next year, though? That's one. I wonder. That's a manager to me where it's like the expectations every year are just like, how are you going to survive that? How are you going to win? I guess you're going to win a championship.
That's it.
Or someone else be trying next year.
We need to get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us here on the Wednesday Drive.
Hey, I'm Caroline Bush from
Live with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final minute or so here of the Wednesday Drive. And our thanks to Jason Caldwell for joining us for most of hour number one. And hopefully had a chance to hear that. Jason commented on quite a few things. If you didn't, we encourage you to check out the podcast.
That's right. Podcast of the Drive available however you listen to podcasts. Go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron, or go to ESPNAU.com and use the podcast center. And all that's presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. Bill, I looked up the thing. So we were just talking about the playoff format for the National League.
Things have changed.
The one and done wild card game is gone. You have the wild card round. The two teams from each league that win their divisions and have the best records.
Okay, that's what I was thinking.
Get the bye. So right now,
your third best division winner is involved in
the wild card. They're the three seed.
Right.
And then you play a best of three with the 3, 4, 5, and 6, and the winners advance. So three hosts six.
6, 4, and 5.
Right, 4 and 5. So right now, Braves and Diamondbacks would get the byes. The Reds would be the 3. The Dodgers would be the 6. 4. No, the Marlins would be the 4. The right. Dodgers would be the 5. And then however they decide a Brewers-Giants tiebreaker.
They'd be 6.
They would be 6. The loser, that would be out.
Well, things will change quite a bit, but it's interesting. Always fun to look at the All-Star break and see where teams are. We're out of time here on the Wednesday Drive. Do we have a little update? Jake going to join us tomorrow?
5:30 tomorrow, Jake Crane from Crane and Company will join the drive.
All right, so we hope you will join us tomorrow. We're back at 4 o'clock. That'll do it for today. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.